Quinlan heart failure one, I gave this a low, and partly for the reason that you said that it hasn't been tested, but also because of concern about whether the composite will provide incremental information, useful information beyond each of the components, and whether the composite is ideally structured to comprise three components, or whether two would be better, or some other number. So I thought that overall, some positive features of the components, but that the usability for both public reporting and as a basis for quality improvement, I felt was uncertain.
There is really no difference. I mean, there could be more data. I mean, we're not the ones having to decide. I mean, that's the, yeah. So I'll give this a look and help.
The harmonization and the could be an H because it's the one with similar vein and it's within the transition to care. Recommendation. What did you get the distinctive or additive value then? I mean, is that the versus the composites or versus what is currently available out there? I mean, that's how do we judge the additive value?
The additive value, I think, is really, does the composite give you something that's distinctly different, that's useful? And as I mentioned, some of the introductory slides, there certainly has been a push for looking at composite measures because they tend to roll up different aspects of information together into a summary score that is a little bit more digestible for various audiences. And so I think you want to be looking at it from, does this do what we, you know, hope composite measures will do and provide maybe more information than its parts or provide information that will be more digestible for various audiences?
Yeah, I would say that part's not clear, but when you look at what the directions are, it's really, is it additive or distinct from what's currently available? I mean, which it is. So I think would you score the heart failure one? Mm-hmm. Would you score the heart failure one in this area? Would it be the same distinctive or additive value? Yeah. So, I mean, that's the, if you get back to the individual components, do you need all three components? Do you need two of the three components? But it's certainly distinctive from what's currently available. So, I mean, it depends on how you interpret that statement. So, I guess I would switch it to an L with the distinctive or additive value between the components.
An L?
What?
Is it really an L? I actually thought the composite, the aggregate, told me more than any of the components. I had problems with the components, but it's a composite. I would have given it. I thought it added value. I would have given it an L.
You would give it as part of the, as opposed to the individual component.
I mean, but I have problems with the individual component.
Sure.
I come back to what someone else said before, and which occurred to me even as I was reading it, which is the fact that I think that this requires some merchandising in order to have people find it usable, because I think we need data about how it can be interpreted. We need to have almost a visual aid in order to see how small changes in performance can affect the score and how that can become part of a hospital's QA program. I think that if you just look at an individual component, how you interpret it and how you act upon it is very difficult to see. But I think that is more than has minimal impact. I think it would have a lot of impact if it were packaged in such a way that it could be understandable. So I think that I wouldn't give it an H, but I'd say that it has more potential than we give any credit for.
Currently an L, but potential for M, so we'll put it, or an H, so we'll give it an M.
Okay.
I just question as to how you would put an NA there. Why would you even be evaluating? Anyway, as in the
for
size.
For the additive value?
Yeah, like, that's it's an important component. Like, if you scored this,
sure,
as any measure as an NA, why would you have gotten this far anyway in the whole process? Yeah.
You're right. It doesn't.
So the individual components, I think the decomposition of the composite is the, I mean, it would be an H because we have individual composites and I don't, they don't overlap. Achieved its stated purpose. Put an H. Again, if you had this measure versus, I honestly, I almost do not want to say this, the E&M thing is still bothering me as a sole agent. See this as a composite, which perhaps have more meaning.
This description of E&M service also is more reflective of a process as linking care back, linking to the inpatient care back to the outpatient setting. So, again, it kind of goes back and forth in terms of viewing that, I think.
Okay, so then overall, because we have some...
That's for the steering committee.
Oh, good. Even though it's yellow. I'm sorry. I just keep going on there.
You're off the hook.
Yeah,
right. Which of these are
the little ones? We do 4A. Or is that for the steering committee?
No,
H because we gave them all H's before. It's all available from electronic sources, so that would be an H. I have no idea what it can check. Susceptibility to inaccuracies, errors, or unintended consequences. Do you think that this could result in patients having any less choice of, say, if you're a large managed care organization that manages a group of patients that go to CMS, do you think they could try and direct patients to one site of care because that care does it better? Would they have less choice of care?
Medicare beneficiaries?
Yeah.
You mean because CMS is somewhat channeling people?
Well, could an individual provider of the CMS services, an outpatient provider, channel them to the best places that coordinate this care?
I hope so.
And that's, okay, so then it was then... They could, but then it's going to get better eventually.
Not exactly. Not exactly less choice. It's sort of value added is one.
Well, I don't, like I said, if the patient doesn't understand what it is, then they'll perceive that you're, you know, they can't go to their Dr. John Smith anymore. If he doesn't coordinate his care very well.
Historically, that doesn't happen.
In fact, any effort to redirect care away from providers has been universally unsuccessful. So.
You have to make the whole thing better.
Okay, so all of these would be H's, not a high susceptibility, high lack of susceptibility.
No, it means...
There's a lot of, so then we should say L or N?
No, it means that they have that, the criteria is that susceptibility to inaccuracies, errors, or...
Can be audited and found.
Yeah. And the ability to audit them are identified. So.
Unintended consequences. Are we happy with an H now? Okay, and then data collection strategy and implementation would be an H. And the feasibility is an H because all the rest were H's. Were all the criteria met? I don't know. Gave some L's, some M's, and some H's. So, all people like to vote. I voted in the middle. Give it an M.
For which?
Okay. And were all criteria. You can forget about that. Again, that's part of the transition form thing.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Did you
want to
do your thing, Ted?
For the CHS.
Oh. That's the heart failure.
Heart failure, the next. Can I ask a quick technical question that cross-cuts, and I think it simply reflects my ignorance, but somebody from CMS can answer it. If I discharge a patient from my hospital and he goes to the VA and is seen in the outpatient department or the emergency room, are those data available to CMS?
VA?
Yeah. Veterans Affairs?
You mean if they are discharged and then if they're discharged
they're
and
discharged
then they go
to my
to
hospital, they have follow up at the VA. Is that available? Data available to you?
Ambulatory follow up or
inpatient? For this particular question, the ambulatory or admission or emergency room visit.
You mean the VA system hospital, that 150 hospital?
Yeah.
We don't have access to that.
Isn't that an exclusion for everything we just talked about?
Since the VA still Medicare?
I think we have an overlap, a proportion of the patient overlap,
yes,
right?
Yes,
I think
there's still Medicare, but
there's
a certain group of, obviously,
yes.
Medicare beneficiaries, but
yeah.
They have to go through a process before they can even initiate the bill to Medicare
yeah.
at a VA system. They have to get signed off by the doctors in that hospital, I think. So it's a little bit complicated, my understanding.
Yeah, but at the receiving, we do, as I understand, we have about 20%. That's what the number we 20% overlap patients we do can identify from the claim.
You do get access data from the VA system. I want to make sure that these patients shouldn't be handled differently. Perhaps it's an exclusion to some of these measures. And I don't know the answer. I'm just asking.
Yeah, we haven't initiated that process yet. So, I mean. Yeah.
Right now, you're basing this on Medicare claims database.
And there's
the
overlap.
Only way a VA patient would be in there, or VA services at a VA facility, is if VA is billing Medicare. Is that correct?
Yeah. And there's another way we could do that is the collaboration between CMS and VA, and that's currently in the process that is the. It's a priority of the secretary that federal agency collaborate with each other. So right now we're not in the process to collaborate on certain measures, like readmission or mortality. So that's the one of the things that we are, you know, working on.
We want to have our EMMs not go to the VA to get those counted.
That's right.
And
then
readmitted
if you have
VA.
To be readmitted for heart failure, they need to go to the VA.
Go to the VA. Through your EMMs.
That's right.
They're going to look
good. Any other comments on the composite 16? Okay. Shall we move on to heart failure?
Okay.
So let's do. You ready, Dr. Rich?
Okay.
Yep.
Which one?
Okay.
Number?
Four. So measure four. I think since we will probably finish all three heart failure, we might as well just continue, but there needs to be maybe we can do a break after the first two. We'll see. So measure four is 30-day post-hospital heart failure discharge E&M service. But this has the same description as for MI, for the Medicare population. The considerations for by NQF have all been satisfied. And the scoring for importance to measure and report, I gave a partial to this for similar reasons because it although it is of high import to actually measure and report, it's still, as an MI, it's not clear that what we'll be capturing is actually what is intended to be captured in that since there are so many comorbidities with heart failure, it's not clear to me that an E&M visit will actually address the issues that are intended to be addressed in a heart failure post-discharge visit. On the other hand, I think that it's well worth measuring and working towards getting there through other incentives and other educational processes that are undertaken by the American College of Cardiology, the Heart Failure Society of America, and the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. So I'd give that a P. Dr. Rich, do you have any comments?
So you're talking about the high impact question? Or
yes.
The whole overall?
1A.
1A.
Mm-hmm.
1A, I gave it an H.
Or a C. Yeah, a different story.
Speak up, please.
Speak up. So the recorder can hear you.
We all can hear you.
Not speaking loud enough?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can hardly hear you.
I gave it an H for A on impact. I think it's certainly a very common, costly condition frequently associated with adverse outcomes. thought that was well justified.
Yeah. So are you, this is measure four, right? Because it doesn't have that scoring system
on
measure
four.
Four.
We don't have four yet.
Okay.
So I was looking at, I interpret that, I guess, to mean the condition as opposed to the specific measure.
Right. And it's supposed to be the focus of the measure. So even though heart failure is a high impact condition, what's being proposed to be measured is the E&M service.
Right.
So I think that's maybe where the difference in. You would feel the same way.
Either a C or a P.
So you're saying that there's evidence that E&M visits produce improve outcomes after heart failure.
Well, that's one C. They're talking about just impact.
The impact of having that occur and how it occurs is a separate issue. Okay.
But I think, you know, it's hard to separate the two out. I mean, obviously with heart failure being, you know, high volume, high cost, and...
I think the evidence is stronger for heart failure than MI, so I'd be willing to go for a C instead of a P for doing relative value. And 1B, opportunity for improvement, I think that certainly has been demonstrated for heart failure, both in individual analyses and in the analysis being presented, so I'll give that a C. Outcome or evidence to support the measure focus, I think that has also been adequately demonstrated, although one could argue that it requires more specialization than is generally available, but I think that has been pretty aptly described for heart failure. Dr. Rich, do you agree?
I agree.
So we're calling it C?
Yeah. And then it comes to strengths and weaknesses. My only reservation is that the actual published data on interventions that where follow-up visits actually make a difference for readmission and morbidity are based on more specialized systems that provide care rather than general care that has been provided by any E&M visit. But I think working towards an E&M visit that specifically addresses the multiple problems that face a discharged heart failure patient is worth pursuing.
I've got several concerns about this. First relates to the time frame. The guidelines for heart failure advocate appropriate follow-up following hospital discharge, but there's no consensus as to the proper time frame for follow-up visits. In fact, I was involved in submitting a response to the PCCI, which is the Physician Support and Performance Improvement Process, and they're also introducing new measures for heart failure, and one of the measures that they proposed was that there's documentation of follow-up appointment schedule without giving any time frame for it. And I actually thought that was too vague because it allowed for follow-up 6 months or a year or something for a hospital discharge. I thought that was much too lenient, and in fact supported a 30-day requirement. But then when that went through the Heart Failure Society steering committee and panel and so forth, they threw that out because they said, well, there's no evidence to suggest that follow-up within 30 days is associated with improved outcomes, and there's a lack of any consensus about what the optimal follow-up time period is. And so it seems to me that with a lack of even consensus opinion, let alone evidence, about optimal follow-up period, that it's difficult to justify a specific follow-up time period as part of the performance measure. So I thought that was problematic. Second, as we talked about before, I was concerned that the proposed measure doesn't capture certain alternative methods of follow-up. It seems to me that we still need clarification on this issue of home health, what can be captured in home health visits. but it also doesn't include clearly things like telephone follow-up and telemonitoring systems, which are becoming increasingly prevalent and which are very effective mechanisms for reducing hospitalizations and improving transition care, particularly. But I thought that the lack of ability to capture those types of follow-ups is problematic. And again, this issue of later on about factors such as race, socioeconomic status, geography, and so forth, also it's not fair to hospitals, for example, that happen to take care of an injured population and end up having an high rate of TB visits and readmissions and a low rate of intended environment. We don't actually score this, but overall, I thought it was a key of a score.
Just from an outside observer standpoint, I don't watch how hard the patients are managed, but certainly there's a trend toward remote management and that kind of life. So, are the cutting edge systems going to get penalized because they don't see the patient back in?
I don't know if at some point it seems to me that there has to be some built that's going to occur as a result of those services. Whether we'll be captured by this, I don't know. Maybe it is, but not this somewhere. Whether it would be captured as an EMM type of service, or monitoring service.
Well, I think there are reservations about how this will actually play out in terms of the impact of the E&M visit, but I think that having the E&M visit has as much or more validity in this complex patient population. So I don't think that we should say that it has no validity, it's just incomplete. There's a summary statement about the first.
The title for these, when they say service, and I guess that's where, you know, they have a service, not a visit. And it's like, if you want, call it what it is, then that's why I was comfortable with calling it. It is a visit. It's not the visit that you're getting credit for. It's not the service. Because it doesn't, a service to me is a component of things that you do to reduce it, that you should be evaluated on the service side of it. I mean, it could be semantics or whatever, but it's really all you're doing is saying that they visited somebody. It doesn't say what they talked about, it doesn't say what they did or what was explained to them. And, you know, it doesn't say it has to be a heart failure specialist, it doesn't say it has to be, you know, primary care physician. So, if they went to the nurse practitioner just to get up, still to Medicare, I mean, that's where they could go, and I guess it's like, to me, I would rather see that these evolve around, you know, a measure related to a service that you're providing. My comments. Those kind of things that if you have a documented service, it's just getting hotter and hotter. It's just in the face over here.
Stop
I'm getting my vitamin D.
It's an all or none thing.
So, I mean, currently it's limited by the way that you have to collect the data, but it would be nice to have other ways to evaluate the service.
All or none.
I'm sorry, I want to back up and clarify a mistake that I made about high impact. The criteria is really that the focus either addresses a specific NPP goal, which you can see that it relates to our the National Priorities Partners goal that more collaborative collaboratively with patients to reduce 30-day readmission rates.
Coordination.
The goal that it would relate to. And it, high impact does relate to more to the condition than the specific So I didn't want to keep you led astray there.
Okay. So moving on to scientific susceptibility. We basically specified, I think based on previous discussions, I'd have to say that that's the C, although other subsequent judgments may condition. Exclusions, I think, are reasonably clear.
The only question I had about exclusions is one I brought up earlier about how to handle the deaths that occur within 30 days. But some tests have helped us on that.
Well, I think that's dealt with in terms of the hierarchy of important measures. Is that correct? Reliability testing.
It's an exclusion. Is that what you're talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was further down. I was looking at the it is the same question.
That's reliability testing. I think that the data have shown that that this could be measured in the authority at a reasonable level. For heart failure, it's just not what it's possible. I get that the validity testing I originally gave a P, but based on the question, this is justified. But I gave it a P, and I think perhaps for the same reason Dr. Rich mentioned, but I don't know that I would still do that. Are you going to comment on that again? Exclusion.
For which one?
2D.
At the same time, this issue of handling the 30-day mortality deaths that occur.
Yeah. Do you feel that you had a good response in terms of better understanding
how
major?
I think that they need to clarify how they're going to handle that, but I think that's a minor issue, and if it's included or not included, then I'm comfortable with that. It needs to be clarified.
Is that, do you understand the issue they're raising?
But it says there are 30
days. So this is what we discussed before about the deaths that occur within 30 days, whether they're included in the denominator or numerator, both.
It is what it is now. Your point was well taken before. Just a quick slide comment about timing. You're right. We're on the timing of the prescriptive, when should the visit occur, your PCBI experience.
Right.
You can see we're sort of dancing here because we're not in a position to be prescriptive. The specialist societies can't be prescriptive. So the sense here is that the providers on the ground should understand how severe a patient really is. And you try to get to see them, in an ambulatory or an evaluation and management before bad things happen. And for some patients, bad things might not be likely to happen for a long time. With other patients, there may be a sense of urgency. But the clock is ticking, and it's your responsibility, quote unquote, under this measure, to do your best to try to have that patient seen before those bad things happen. We put a dance around the time frame, other than accepting the precedent of 30 days.
I don't disagree at all with what your point is. Lots of things I said, I supported that. It may seem somewhat disingenuous of me to not support it here, since I supported it for the Heart Failure Society.
Okay.
The problem I have is that I have trouble advocating a performance measure that is not only supported by direct evidence, but there's not even a consensus opinion about this particular time frame. So that seems to me to be bit problematic. In other words, you can show this to a bunch of heart failure experts and get a lot of different views as to whether or not this is the right time frame or not, and not be able to reach a consensus that we should look at 30 days.
So a large percentage, I mean, this is your field doing more than mine. So a large percentage of cardiologists would say it's just okay to see them in the second or the third or the fourth month as it is the first one?
Surprisingly, that's what it seems like. If they're sick, seeing them even sooner or having some sort of cause. In fact, I think that a better way to look at it would be, if there's any way of judging this, is there be some contact with the patient within a week of hospital discharge, either a telephone call or a home health visit or something like that. That would be definitely better as far as the transition of care, making sure that they're taking the right medicines and weighing themselves or whatever else they're watching their diet. But again, we couldn't reach a consensus on that. So.
But yeah, although it's not based on evidence, the IHI, the whole IHI initiative on transitions of care for heart failure patients, makes a statement about risk stratification. So they recommend that there be a contact point, but not necessarily a visit. And ideally, in the highest risk patients at highest risk for the admission, that they be seen between 5 and 7 days. So they're making a recommendation, but not based on consensus, but based on this white paper that they published in 2007. So but they're making sense out of it, and I think that any practicing cardiologist would agree with that as a general recommendation, but it's risk stratified rather than being just a general recommendation. I don't see how that could be incorporated into this in any meaningful way.
And I agree with the concept of risk stratification. On the other hand, I think you can make the argument that any patient within the hospital for a heart failure exacerbation or new onset heart failure is by definition a reasonably high risk group, some higher than others, but high risk overall, and some early follow-up is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no data and there's no consensus on it, so that's the concern I have here.
Right.
I think we have performance measures that are not even based on consensus opinion.
I feel your pain. I don't know why. So I think that if we're saying that this there's evidence that it be done, I think that there's just as much burden to say how it should be done, and I don't know that that's going to come out of the composite measure. So do we want to give that a C? For exclusions justified. I think that gave exclusions justified. What about risk adjustment? I gave risk adjustment a P, but mostly because the risk adjustment for adjusting for the in-hospital parameters doesn't really account for the risk of readmission, but that may not be the purpose of this particular measure. But as far as it goes along with the other measures where the risk adjustment follows the Yale model, it's acceptable.
Right. I think it's the best we have. The C statistics here is even less robust than some of the ones we heard about earlier, on the order of 0.56. So we're missing a lot of the variability, but it's the best we have, and it's certainly consistent with the risk stratification model that's used for the existing 30-day readmission measure. So.
And do you both think that this should be risk adjusted? E&M service?
Absolutely should be risk adjusted, yes.
So it's risk adjusted but not risk stratified, so you're losing all the disparities in care?
Okay. Identification of meaningful differences in performance. I think that the documentation actually convinced me that as proposed and with modifications that this would be able to identify meaningful differences in performance, but the interpretation is going to be a larger problem, so I give that a C. Comparability of multiple data sources is not applicable. Disparities in care, I don't think that with an address, so I gave that an N. Strengths and weaknesses. You know, I think that the strengths are the fact that this actually is a logical extension of the inpatient process measures that call for an E&M follow-up. So it's a logical extension of that. But my concern then is that while there are 6 process measures for inpatient heart failure care, for self-management, and several others for provision of care measures, that this may not be more than a process measure in itself, because it doesn't guarantee that the 6 self-management core measures that are part of the heart failure inpatient management are actually reinforced or built upon. So I'm not sure that this is going to become an outcome that is positive, but it may be part of a checklist. The other thing is that since at least 60% in some settings, 60% of the readmissions for heart failure, as I mentioned earlier, are for non-heart failure primary diagnoses, that managing and capturing the risk for those types of readmissions in the E&M visit may not be possible. So although we want to reduce the risk for readmission, the number of readmissions that we reduce may or may not be related to heart failure and may not be able to be identified at the first E&M visit. On the other hand, if there's a clinician education process that identifies those high-risk comorbidities, then I think it would be a stronger measure. So the E&M visit is asking an enormous amount of the complex heart failure population to have an impact on that single point of contact. So I think it's strongest in a system that actually identifies those individuals who are at highest risk, and I think that's not necessarily the impact of having an E&M visit.
I fundamentally agree with your comments. I gave it overall partial for fulfilling criteria for scientific acceptability. The two concerns that I had, main concerns, were the fact that the validity hasn't been tested, and the inability to capture the use of heart failure nurse telephone calls and telemonitoring devices and so forth. And then a lesser concern about this validity or reliability of the risk adjustment model. I think there's much that can be done about that.
Any other comments? From the developer, do you have any comments about the questions that we raised?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, usability. Again, I think that just for the AMI thing, I gave this a P for meaningful, understand, and useful information, only in that I'm not sure that the impact of the E&M visit by itself will tell a given hospital whether their handoff has been successful, but I think that the more it is examined as part of the composite may be a useful component. Harmonization. I think this is harmonized with the 30-day outcome. It's at least harmonized with the AMI visit. But since it is a unique heart failure measure, I don't see that it's harmonized with anything other than the proposed E&M visit. So I gave that a non-applicable. Distinctive or additive value, I gave that a C because I think it is worth pursuing, if only to gather information about its utility. And its utility may be greater in the setting of a composite measure. And strengths and weaknesses regarding usability, they're the same issues regarding whether or not the the risk stratification will allow identification of patients who should be seen and are seen, and I think that there's a tension between the risk stratification for adjusting for the model versus the risk stratification about who actually can benefit most from being seen in a 30-day period. But I don't see any other way around just gathering the information to begin with. Feasibility, just as in other areas where this is electronic data, I don't see any problem when gave all four components of seed.
Did Dr. Rich start to say something?
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that my scores were identical to his on the feasibility criteria.
So I think based on that, we have a C for the feasibility. Again, the usability has to do with how the information is conveyed and how it's interpreted by the individual hospital. But I do think that the way this was presented and the information that was gathered is compelling enough for this to be a strong measure to support. Any other comments about this?
A couple comments. One on just on A.
For feasibility?
Yeah, feasibility for
4A. I had intended to cover all four components of feasibility.
And rated them all a C?
Rated them all a C, yeah, all five components, right.
Dr. Rich, your comments on any of them?
I'm actually having trouble hearing you guys because it's noisy.
Yeah, that's fine.
But for 4A, it looks like you gave it a P. I also gave it a P. And it relates to the same concern as before, the ability to capture these other types of follow-up visits, and I don't think we have an existing mechanism to do that. Other aspects of it are clear and direct and not a problem. Did you cover, I couldn't hear, did you cover B, C, D already or not?
Yes. I did. I think I had actually changed after I submitted this. I changed 4A to a C because I think as presented, it fulfills the criterion. But I agree that other methods to capture a contact point, as many professional societies have recommended, would be useful. But I don't see that the model allows that to be incorporated at the present time.
Right. That is my only concern about it. And I agree on the other B and C. I agree, or C, score C. The susceptibility to inaccuracies. This is one I had, I think, trouble interpreting exactly what that meant. I think that it's susceptible to inaccuracies to the extent that it isn't actually measuring what it's intended to measure, which is continuity of care and quality of transitions and so forth, due to the limitations that we've discussed, and it's not a direct measure of those, and so it's not necessarily going to give an exact measurement, and it's inaccurate with some variability to that extent. But we have some of the other issues that have been discussed about an office visit can imply either good transition or good follow-up care if it was a scheduled visit, or it can imply that things weren't done adequately at the time of discharge and so the person was doing worse and ended up with an office visit, either scheduled or unscheduled. So there's some inaccuracy in that respect as well. I didn't think that either of these were major. I just gave it a P for 4D. And then for the implementation, I thought it was C. Collection strategy, I thought, was key.
So, in general, feasibility seems to be not an issue. I guess the question is when we're talking about susceptibility to inaccuracies, is it really the data we're examining, or is it the interpretation of the data? And that's one of the difficulties that we have.
And that's pretty much what I meant by, I wasn't sure I quite understood what was meant by inaccuracy.
Right. And I think the issue you brought up about, is it measuring, you know, it really is a validity issue. Can you make a conclusion about the quality of the transition, the quality of care, when you're missing those other avenues of follow-up? This has more to do with, you know, people have mentioned upcoding, gaming, you know, if you have a measure of one thing, does it incentivize people to provide more of something else that you don't want? So it's really kind of how people react to the measurement, I guess.
So I think that the measure is fundamentally feasible. I don't have any major concerns about the feasibility of measuring this.
Would your validity score appear or see? If you're concerned about the validity, is that where we should, these sort of issues should
it's
be raised?
A P.
What that is a P?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The validity is a P?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Validity,
is a P?
I think was an M because there wasn't any data. That's two, right?
Two C.
C, right?
Two C.
Yeah, I gave that an M, and I think that Ed gave it an M also.
Okay, so
not
C.
Validated.
All right, we had a split P and M on that one.
If I think we both had questions about it. Okay.
Has NQF endorsed any composites yet?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. The most recent ones were really the ARC QI composite, where they had composites. Was it the mortality measure? No. Mortality by procedure. So they did a composite of a variety of the procedures. So it was all about mortality, but the individual ARC QIs are mortality. Yeah, are complications. So, those were approved, and then we have the one diabetes.
Yeah, we have
care.
We have a couple of the all or none composite measures. The perfect care. There's more process measures than that.
And we're still, as you can tell, kind of working our way through how to actually. We had a composite evaluation steering committee that looked at evaluation, which kind of led to the questions that we asked about the composites. But
we're always learning.
Okay. Any other issues with this? We move on to the ED measure, which is 6.
This is 006, and this is looking at 30-day ED visits following an admission for acute myocardial infarction, and it's really pretty much exactly analogous to the measure we talked about earlier with respect to, for heart failure. The same confusion as epinephrine. Analogous to the MI1 we talked about before, but looking at heart failure, and I have basically the same concerns that we discussed before. Going through the criteria here, importance to measure and report with respect to 1A, high impact. I gave that a C. I do think that this is a high impact condition, expensive, high rate of emergency department visits following hospital discharge, and I do believe that it relates to a large extent to inadequacies in continuity of care, and so I think that this is an important area. I think that the developers did a good job of justifying that as well. With regard to opportunity for improvement, I gave this a P partial. I think that there is considerable variability, so that would allow for room for improvement. There's definitely gaps in performance between some centers versus others. The concern that I had relates in part to the fact that the measure captures all kinds of ED visits, not just those related to the previous heart failure admission, and whether or not there's opportunity for improvement for completely unrelated emergency room visits in this population that has high comorbidity is not clear to me. So I think that there's opportunity for improvement with respect to reducing the rate of return visits for heart failure. For the broader measure, I'm not so convinced. And you know, again, as we heard before, some 40-50% of ED visits within 1 month of hospital discharge for heart failure are unrelated to heart failure per se. So, and if you have any further comments about either of those 2 points?
Well, I'm still concerned that ED visits is a low number. I was intrigued by looking at the data that if you look at the size of the hospital and you look at the spread of the 95th percentile, there is actually there seems to be a relationship. It's not a correlation between the size of the hospital discharge number and the number of ED visits, which I think is interesting. It may reflect the size of the catchment area and the organization of the primary care, in that there do seem to be a higher number of ED visits in the lower population, heart failure population hospitals, but I don't think that's an improvement. Is there any data, Dr. Tompkins, to indicate that there is a relationship for heart failure management per se? In ED, I think there probably wasn't.
Do we have data, I mean, going into this process to indicate that the ED visit was somehow around the heart failure?
Yeah.
We haven't spec'd it that way, although if it's a question of, you know, FYI, what could we say? We could go back and look to see what the reported clinical reasons for the ED visit were and see whether the extent, in anybody's judgment, they are connected to the heart failure, like their respiratory, pulmonary pain, whatever those sort of things would be instead of broken legs.
But it would be interesting to know how a given hospital can focus on the heart failure population per se, and to know whether the best practices actually show that the heart failure ED visits are lower and correlated to the admission rate. But that may not be feasible based on those retrospective data.
We can show what the most frequent ICD-9 codes were associated with ED visits in the 30-day period following heart failure discharge, if that's informative and useful.
I'd be interested in knowing. I don't know if the committee would, but I think it would be useful to know that impacted.
I think the premise eventually is that you would think that it would be a standard practice for hospitals and delivery systems to watch everybody who's coming out of the hospital to see what's going on, to see whether they can intervene. Again, this is under care coordination, not under, you know, technical clinical medicine per se.
Right.
This is the idea, as you articulated well, I think, in your comments, that this is an attempt to see that these vulnerable populations are somehow under somebody's watch for whatever is likely to be happening or likely to emerge, and try to intervene even by referral or follow up again if needed. But by your informational question, we can provide that. We can show the distribution of ICD-9 codes for ED visits that would be clocked under this measure.
So for 1C, outcome or evidence to support the measure focus, I think that the rationale for the measure is clearly articulated, but again, there's lack of evidence to support the notion that this actually measures quality of transitional care. So I gave this a M, I believe, as the evidence base. And then for the overall strengths and weaknesses, I thought that heart failure is obviously high impact, high cost condition, considerable variability in care. Transitional care post-discharge is a domain for which there's substantial potential for improvement, leading to more favorable clinical outcomes. But I don't think that the developers provide a compelling argument that this measure will provide substantial new information relative to the existing measure of all-cause readmissions within 30 days. I think that in comparing those two measures, I personally favor the existing measure over this one for two reasons. One is the issue of the ED visits capturing a large number of visits that are unrelated to the preceding heart failure admission and in many cases are trivial and just reflect people using the ED as their ECP. I think that that's a significant limitation and leads to the concern that the measure is not measuring what it's intended to measure. Second, also we discussed earlier the possibility that that an ED visit might in some cases be a favorable outcome to the extent that patients were instructed to contact their doctors if they had worsening symptoms and did so, were told to go to the emergency room and were able to be treated in the emergency room with diuretics or whatever and then discharged without a hospital admission, as opposed to not contacting their doctor in the first place until symptoms got so bad that they ended up in an accident in the emergency room. So I think that that's a limitation of it as well. And that's basically it. So I thought that overall, in the context of the existing measure, that proposed new measure doesn't fulfill the criteria for importance to measure and report.
Well, I think I agree with that. I think that the ED visit can be a positive, and I am concerned that its categorization as a universal negative may be difficult. I think we need more data to see what the impact of an ED visit is. You know, it would be nice to know if what the percentage of ED visits actually attempt to manage heart failure. I think in your outline, you mentioned a statistic that patients seen in the ED for heart failure have an 80% admission rate for heart failure. Now, it might be nice to know when that occurs in the 30-day period, too, because if the ED visit rate is 7-9% and the readmission rate is 24%, at what point do the ED fail? And I think that only the composite measure may be able to tell us that. But if we knew exactly how many ED visits are for management of heart failure that don't need admission, that's an additional piece of information that I could use.
If I could think, you know, talk about the readmission, what all-cause readmission, I think the issue here, we can provide the information about all the diagnosis code for the ED visit, but I think the issues here is how do you define that causes of the ED or the ED diagnosis code is not relevant to the discharge problem. And I think that what you are asking for, a need one more step to screen this. Because for readmission, we did go through a process to separate them, see what are the complications not related to the discharge diagnosis code. So I think I just don't know if we provide you with this information about all this diagnosis code here, how do you plan, how does that contribute to your decision making, or what are you going to do with that information?
Well, I don't think it's not a population-based decision, it's an institution-based decision, I think. If you are trying to allocate resources to have an impact on readmissions, you're not going to go from 23% readmissions post heart failure to zero. You're going to take a look at what percentage might be averted. For instance, IHI wants to reduce readmissions for heart failure 20% over the next 18 months or something like that. And then if you look at working with an individual emergency department to say we want to reduce readmissions for heart failure 20%, finding a mechanism by which an emergency room might facilitate an ENAM visit or some other management process would be useful.
So if we say that, you know, for readmission, we're not aiming towards zero readmission because they are something that, you know, maybe that's necessary or some. So, but for ED measure, would that be the same case that we're not shooting at zero ED visits, but there are certain amount of the ED visits could be reduced?
Correct, and that may be by the E&M visit beforehand, but by the same token, an ED visit might avert a readmission by focusing on the reason for the ED visit and averting a readmission by another management team.
Right, hence the differential weighting in the ultimate composite. You do score points, so to speak, by averting readmission, even if it means sending people to the ED and triage from there.
Right.
But that's not as good as intervening first outside of the emergency context.
Absolutely, but I think that understanding the processes that lead to a better outcome and reduce costs is what we're all trying to get. So, the score is useful. The composite score will tell us something, but so will understanding why a patient goes to the emergency room and doesn't need admission.
But I think the question is, what will that add to your evaluation of this measure?
Yeah.
Is that information about getting the distribution of diagnoses for ED visits, how does that factor into how you're evaluating this measure, since the measure being proposed is for all cause?
Right. Mm-hmm. No, I don't. It's not going to be an up or down vote.
Right.
No.
But I guess is everyone comfortable that Dr. Rich's assertion that a large number of ED visits are for trivial and whatever other diagnoses? Do we know that?
It seems that I'm the last person in the room to answer this, so maybe I shouldn't be. But it seems to me within a couple of weeks after being discharged from the hospital for heart failure, the idea that these ED visits are simply well visits or something. If somebody is going to the emergency room, something is wrong, right? It's not to say that going to the emergency room was the wrong decision, but if we're looking about system dynamics here and managing, navigating patients from the date of discharge all the way to wellness, and to the extent that a institution or delivery system is showing excessive reliance on the emergency department, seems to be worse than a hospital or system that's relying on or somehow implementing ambulatory follow-up and more proactively dealing with these patients.
I think before you can even get to your point, addressing Dr. Rich's point about what is the reason that patients come to the ED,
right.
And if it is trivial things, that's one thing, but if it's not, that's a different thing. Do we know that data?
Right.
And if it's available, perhaps it's useful in decision making.
We can provide that.
Measure.
We can provide that. But again, part of our running through this is the idea that the emergency department business is not free to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's using up capacity. It costs Medicare a chunk of change to have somebody seen in the emergency department. So even if the clinical reasons, I'd love it if the clinical reasons were all trivial. That means that if anybody started paying attention to these, they could knock them down real fast and save a lot of money and save a lot of aggravation of people going to the emergency department when there's a better way.
So my assertion regarding this, this decreased value of the emergency room visit as a performance measure is in the context or in comparison to the existing measure, which is the 30-day readmission rate. And my point is that I think that the 30-day readmission rate provides a more reliable index of significant clinical deterioration, whether it's heart failure or whether it's some other reason they came in with pneumonia or whatever, and I have no problem with the all-cause readmission rate. The question is whether also looking at, in other words, adding in the patients who came to the emergency department but didn't get admitted, were discharged from the emergency room, and therefore did not have a serious enough problem to warrant hospitalization in the judgment of the ED people, whether that provides any additional information about this continuity of care issue. That's what I think my opinion is, probably not. And we don't have evidence that it does. So that's
I think
everyone
has a empirical question.
Speak up a little bit.
Okay.
Want the shades up?
The shades up.
Sun's out of the way.
Oh, yeah.
Give us light until it gets dark.
Sorry about that. I speak very softly, so I, you know, just wanted to remind everyone of my original statement in the morning that, you know, this ED visit measure will be important in assessing where patients are going, you know, when hospitals are trying to reduce readmissions, whether they're just being diverted to the ED and discharged when they really should be, you know, sent somewhere else, either, you know, admitted, or, you know, whether they could be seen by a primary care physician outside the hospital altogether. I just think that this measure completes a larger picture that, you know, you need each of these components to see what's really going on and, you know, with the patient after their discharge. So,
for AMI, you were going to go and look at the correlation between TB
And I would also argue that, you know, that correlation may change over time as people try to reduce services in one area. You might see a different correlation, you know, but it doesn't mean that it's not important to measure and monitor and report in concert with other measures.
I think that if additional data were presented to support the notion that this provides incremental value, then that would change things significantly in my view. I think that to move forward with testing this measure, if that's the next step, it's proof, without additional supporting evidence that this is going to be useful, I think that would not be effective.
So the issue here for us to answer or to address, based on any analysis we could put together to address the issue, is that what's the added value of this ED measure? That's the question, right?
Right. Along those lines, can I just, this is probably more about specifications, but how is a ED visit that's followed by a hospital admission? Like, the, you know, a lot of people go ED to admission. Which of those ends up being counted, or do both get counted?
They're on different days.
They're the individual measures, so they would both be counted in the individual measures.
If they happen the same day, they wouldn't be counted in the ED.
If the ED visit and the readmission are occurring on the same day, in the Medicare claims, we can't separate in time. So if someone is admitted to the hospital through the ED, then the ED doesn't count separately.
Okay.
It's just the readmission that day.
Right. Okay.
So if somebody comes in at 11 p.m. at night and is readmitted at 1 a.m., is it two separate?
Maybe.
That's a
plausible question. Yeah.
It's a question of 2 hours?
Yeah.
She's saying
it would be folded into one inpatient.
Right.
Your story was still good. So the way this gets really into the next question, which is the measure specification 2A, and I think this is fine. I gave this a C, and it's clearly stated ED visit is not counted in the numerator if the beneficiary has a hospital claim that is an admission prior to the ED visit during the 30-day self-discharge period. And also if the patient is subsequently hospitalized. So I think that's clearly specified. But then the next item is reliability testing, which I thought was fine. I gave this a C. They present data showing that there's quite a close relationship over a period of years Although the some of the correlation coefficients are not very high, I think that it appears to be satisfactory reliability on this measurement. Ted, did you have further comments about that?
No, I 2B. 2B, I didn't have a problem with that.
And
I
2C is the validity testing, and again, there's no real data presented, so I gave this an M. The exclusions, exclusions justified, total fine, with a C. And then the risk adjustment model, I gave a P, largely because of relatively low C statistic and the fact that although it's the best available model and it's certainly same as used in other proposed measures as well as existing measure, it doesn't capture a lot of the variability in
some of the things
concerning. Identification of meaningful differences in performance. I gave this a P, and I'm not going to remember exactly why.
I did too, but mostly because of narrow. So.
What I said was that there's a lack of quantification and meaningful difference in performance, but that may not be correct. I did this one first, and I think that I might not have interpreted the information that was provided correctly. I'm not sure. That it's comparability of multiple data sources, I thought was not applicable. There aren't multiple data sources. Disparities, again, not adequately addressed, in my opinion. I gave it an M. And so for overall strengths and weaknesses, I said that the numerator and denominator are well-defined, easily measurable using existing data sources. Rationale for, I was going to talk about earlier, I'll take that out. Reliability and reproducibility of the measure appears to be excellent. Exclusion criteria well-described and appropriate. A major limitation is that lack of evidence that the promotes proposed measures, a valid surrogate for the quality of care coordination and transitional care. Risk adjustment model is the same as that used for existing 30-day readmission measure, but the actual performance of the model is weak with a C statistic of only 0.53 to 0.54, so when you said 0.66, it's, wow, that's great. It'd be nice if we could come up with a better model. Concerns about disparities in care, how that's going to be addressed.
I gave it the overall a P if we're using that for the general description, and basically because I was concerned that if we're addressing this as a measure of heart failure care, we may not be measuring heart failure care, but measuring general management to keep people out of the hospital, which is a laudable goal, but it still may not be measuring managing heart failure.
And moving to usability, 3A.
I have two questions about section 2 real quick. What is the percentage of patients that are in the palliative care mode? Because those people aren't going to go to the ED. And if there's a high percentage of them, should they be excluded in some fashion from the measure? I don't know how frequently this occurs in heart failure. I know it occurs in common stroke.
Well, I would argue that they should be included because they'll be be in the denominator, but they won't be in the numerator, reflecting good outcome. And so I would say to the extent that referral for failure to care is a favorable outcome in terms of what we're trying to measure, transition in care and coordination and so forth, that would be good. And so I would say we're improved. Including that, regrettably, it's a very small proportion of patients who also have a heart failure end up in that group anyway. But those that do, I think, it's reasonable to include them. And not to complicate things by trying to identify those people for exclusion, which might be problematic as well.
There are developing criteria for palliative care and heart failure, but at least in the state of Washington, only 5% of patients that are with heart failure in hospice and palliative care. It's a much underused service.
And I don't understand that rationale that you described, but if it's slow, then it's probably not worth mentioning or worrying about. And then the second question that I have is, it seems to me from somebody who's not a cardiologist that the ejection fraction is like where the money is, and you're not measuring that as part of the risk adjustment box. Is that where the admissions come in?
Is that where the money is?
Yeah.
That's the opposite, I think.
Yeah. ejection fraction is a poor,
money
reasonable
money.
Predictor of short-term mortality. That's a poor predictor of rehospitalization.
Okay.
People who have the so-called diastolic dysfunction have equivalent rehospitalization rates.
The average ejection fraction for acutely compensated heart failure is 47%, so it really doesn't discriminate for readmission.
Probably will for hospice.
This question is that I would like to get a clear idea from maybe Karen about the discussion of the C statistics. I heard that what Karen you're saying that I shouldn't be the only one factor to determine the measure, and I also understand that when case mix or risk factor patient factors is not it's not explaining the variation, and then a system factors, if system factors take place more role in this, that will lead to the C statistic low.
Mm-hmm.
So that sometimes you see they are all lack of variation because they are clustered together, and that for readmission because everybody's bad, you know, so kind of a clustered together, and that C statistic will be low. I'm not saying that you shouldn't take into account, but I just want to get a clear idea from here whether C statistic can be the sole determining of whether the risk adjustment is good or bad.
Right, and I think, you know, what's in the form, and I think you have more detail in the supplemental, is looking at this difference between the lowest decile and the highest decile, and actually looking at the calibration that they refer to by decile. And we're actually going to have a consultant look at some of these more technical issues that can provide more advice to our steering committee and TAPS about the actual elements of risk adjustment modeling. But that's my understanding from the group of experts we had before is that you really have to look at both and not rely just definitely not rely solely on the C statistic.
This has certainly been a trend in statistics in the last decade or so. There are a number of big review articles. If you want to send me your email address, I'd be happy to send you some.
You mean the C statistic?
Okay. The limitations of the C statistic.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying
that the
decision was made based on C statistics. I just want to get a clarification on that point there.
So what was the rating she's getting at? What was the rating that was given that? Did the rationale seem to be related to...
Well, I think I didn't hear anything different than I've heard all day. You know, it's a relatively low C statistic, although it's the best model available. There's still concern about what isn't being captured and that sort of thing. That was a partial...
Have we finished with measure?
So, right.
Feasibility.
Usability. 3A, meaningful, understandable, useful, not tested, so that's an M. Then 3B, harmonization, that's a C. And 3C, distinctive or additive value. Gave it an M, no data, basically.
Any other comments?
I don't have any disagreement with that.
Further comments, Ed?
Well, again, I think the usability is only in so much as it can be acted upon, although I think it can be acted upon in context with other information about how patients use the emergency room, why they're going there, and what's the end result of them being in the emergency room. So I have the same misgivings about how you interpret an isolated part of the process of care. I think that it has to be put in context with what happens there and why they're there.
And feasibility for a data generated as a byproduct of care processes, not to have electronic resources or sources, yes. That's the exclusion from appropriate and well-defined. Susceptibility to inaccuracies, same point I made earlier. I gave it a P, but it's the same use as I mentioned earlier about that the actual measure was important to measure. So that overall feasibility, I thought that I have no major concerns about it. It by and large fulfills the criteria for feasibility. My main overall overarching concern is that I didn't think that it really met criteria for importance to measure, based on currently available data that we have. Again, that's in the context of the existing 30-day readmission measurements. Ed?
I think it depends on how you look at the criteria for importance to measure it. I think that I agree that there are concerns about it, but I think it does meet the criteria.
So if there wasn't a pre-existing measure, in fact, we had some exchange, I think, with Reeve about this, that email. How to interpret that criteria since there is an existing measure. I think that if there wasn't an existing measure, and this was a new measure, first measure to look at this, then I think there would meet the criteria. In the context of the existing measure, that's why I have a problem with it.
Excuse me, we're talking about the E&M measure right now, aren't we? Or the ED visit measure, sorry. So, in terms of existing measure, you're referring to the readmission measure?
I think they're so interdependent that you could argue the opposite, too. If there were no readmission measure, looking just at the ED would raise as many questions as it would answer.
Yes, I think that the existing measure is better than the ED measure for the reasons I mentioned earlier.
Right.
So I agree with keeping the existing measure and wouldn't support any mismeasure. At least, again, unless we had some further data showing that it provides incremental information that addresses the relevant issues.
Anything else on that?
Okay. I think that's well stated. That's enough to be said there. Okay. So as it stands, we have just the composite measure for heart failure to talk about today. I guess it would be worth taking a vote about whether we want a 5-minute break or just slog on through. People have to get to the airport.
Yeah, I think we need to just push on and be done.
I think that's good.
Yeah.
I'll be right back.
Okay, so measure 17. At least it's a higher number.
Yeah, I know. Who's the primary?
Me.
Okay, I'll put your...
I am. But welcome Dr. Rich's comment. So this is measure 17, 30-day post-hospital heart failure discharge care transition composite measure. We have a developer, Dr. Tompkins, here representing the Brandeis team. So the conditions for consideration by NQF have been met, and we need to address the importance to measure and report. So the measure, as stated, is
pretty much parallel to the measure for AMI composite. This is meant to use a weighted measure for 30-day readmission ED visit, which is occurring before an E&M visit, and an E&M visit that is occurring both before an ED visit and an E&M visit. So the purpose of the composite measure, I think, is clear. The quality construct used in developing the measure is clear enough, but still, I think, is difficult to understand at the face of it. But the quality construct, in terms of representing the continuum of care and trying to reduce ED visits, increase E&M visits, and reduce readmissions, is clearly stated, and I think is a quality measure that can be encouraged if its implementation is difficult. So in terms of 1A, the importance to measure and report, I think I initially gave an M, but I would give it an H now, after the discussions that have gone on and the clarifications that we have. The conceptual construct, Dr. Rich, please chime in if you have other thoughts.
Let's see, what are you on?
1D.
1D.
The quality construct.
One D or one E?
One D.
I gave it an M.
But having looked at it further, I gave it an H because of the fact that it was described with a reasonable amount of detail. Points to track below for clarity. Do you want to say anything more about why you gave it an M?
A bit more about the final summary.
Okay. The conceptual construct for quality, I think we have the same difficulties, again, in interpreting the components of the composite and understanding how each of them contribute to the overall quality construct, but I think that the conceptual process is clear enough. Again, the ED visits are difficult to interpret, and I think we need more data about that, but I gave this an M for the conceptual construct for quality. Dr. Rich? For 1E?
Yeah, I gave that an M also. Just give my general comments after the overall for the importance to measure.
Okay.
Oh, I think we're there.
Yeah, we're there. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. You done?
Yes, I'm done.
Oh, okay. So for the overall importance to measure, it's a little bit of a catch-22. I gave this an N. Because one of the criteria is that each individual component has to be important to measure, and since I scored the ED visits, it's not important enough to measure, I had to give overall N for this. However, as discussed earlier, I think that the concept of having a composite measure to look at this quality of transitions in care and so forth, I think is a good one, and I'm generally supportive of that. From the conceptual perspective, just a word about my own perspective on how I think about the composite measures. As Reva articulated earlier, I think that that we first of all have to look at whether or not the composite measure provides additional information, incremental value beyond the sum of its individual components. If not, then there's no point in measuring the composite. But I think that the converse is also true, that if we accept a composite measure, then we need to go back and look at each of the components and say, well, now that we have this composite measure, is it still important to measure each of these individual components? Again, to try to have this few and parsimonious number of measures. And that would even include the existing measure of 30-day readmissions. If a well-validated composite measure captured all of the information that we got from the 30-day readmission, then what is the question of, well, do we still need to look at 30-day readmission independently, separate from the composite measure? So that basically is my overall opinion about this. I think that, again, looking at the composite as currently proposed, I don't think that there's evidence provided that it will provide incremental value. I also don't think that there's evidence provided that that these are the right three components, and that expect that just looking at the 30-day readmission rate and the the 30-day EMM visit coding will provide equivalent information to the three component model. But I think we need to wait on that. So I think that this is worth pursuing. I think that composite measure is worth pursuing, but like, it's not there yet.
I think we need to understand the relationships between each of the components of the composite measure, and I think the weakest one so far is ED, but I think that really is a statement that it can't stand by itself as a measure, more than the fact that it's not worth measuring. I think it's as a component of the composite measure, I think it gives us some information, particularly if the stratification of why patients are using the emergency room or why a given healthcare system is encouraging emergency room visits is going to be worth knowing. Initially, it actually took me about 5 hours to go through this measure to try to understand it, and the only way I could understand it was to make an Excel calculator where I put in the observed to expected and predicted to expected data, regression modeling, and then made a calculator. If I put in numbers about what I would expect a reasonable QA effort to do for readmission, ED visits, and E&M visits, like reduce readmissions by 20%, reduce ED visits by 2%, and reduce E&M visits by 10%, then my score went up so that I could understand what I was doing. But I don't know that having the score itself tells the hospital what needs to know. On the other hand, I don't think that any of the components by themselves will tell the hospital what needs to know, so I think that the composite actually will eventually give some information, but it may require a significant one entry.
Yeah, I think that one strength of the composite, which we'll get to later on, is that can be easily broken down into its components, so that if the hospital gets such and such a score, they can look at what went into that score. They can say, well, where are we falling down? Is it on the not scheduling enough E&M visits, or is too many ED visits, or too many readmissions? And that will be easy to determine. I think that's a plus.
Is that how it will be reported if it were approved?
I'm sorry.
Would the components be reported as well as the composite percentile and score?
We would probably provide the individual components for hospitals as well as the composite measure so that they could see what's happening. In terms of public reporting, that would be based on consumer feedback, our focus group testing on, you know, whether it would be necessary to show the component measures with the composite score on a public reporting site. But the individual components would be provided to the hospital as part of a report so that they could, you know, monitor and track the component measures as well as the composite.
So you could report does not significantly deviate from the national standard the way some of the other measures are done on the CMS website.
Sure. What is the process here? Will you will not endorse composite unless each one is endorsed? I just don't know.
No.
Each one has to be evaluated.
Evaluate, but not endorsed.
And to have met the criteria. So what that means is, I mean, and it's a question that the TAPS and steering committees have to address. I mean, if they think, I guess the question would be, if a measure is not maybe important enough to stand alone, but it's a scientifically sound measure and contributes to the composite, then the composite can go forward without us endorsing that measure as a standalone measure. So the idea is that the individual measure has to be looked at, because if it's not a scientifically sound measure, why would you want it in a composite? But if the determination is that, you know, it really is not that useful as a measure to stand alone, it does not have to be endorsed separately as a standalone measure, but it that component needs to be reviewed to see if it is adequate to even consider being included in a composite.
Well, the hospitals get feedback as to where these readmissions are occurring.
In terms of which hospitals the patients wind up in,
mm-hmm.
They currently don't.
I don't think we can provide a hospital with data. If,
like
that,
we just heard them, but that 90% of them are being admitted to the hospital that's across town.
We can't say across town. We can say how many, because this is a patient confidential. We can't tell where they go. We can't inform the hospital.
In aggregate, not necessarily by patient. Well, they won't get any aggregate information either. You'll just find out they were readmitted, and they have no way of knowing if it's their hospital that's doing the readmitting or someone else.
I think currently in the readmission hospital statistic report, we tell them aggregate level how many.
Well, we tell them how many patients were readmitted, but we don't tell them where they went.
Okay.
Do you even tell them like how many were admitted back to their own hospital versus another?
We don't provide that, do we?
Setting except in a very localized. We can do it in Puget Sound, for instance.
But it should be in the hospital specific report. That's why I'm asking.
And then we get about 10.
Then we don't.
So let's move on to scientific acceptability. Precisely specified, since these are the components, measures are precisely specified, I don't see any reason not to accept the specifications of the components of the composite measure.
Except this, there are specifications that are just unique to the composite, so how it's combined, etc.
Right. So there are time-sensitive issues related to how each was defined.
Right.
But so that the ED visit has to occur after the primary admission and before readmission, and the E&M has to occur before both. But those are precisely specified. So you're right. They are different, but they are precisely specified. To my satisfaction. Then the calculation algorithm is in a sense arbitrary, but is weighted in such a way that appears to make sense and needs follow-up data described for it. I don't have any issue with that, so I gave that.
One question I had is, just occurred to me, if somebody has an ED visit, let's say 10 days post-discharge, they're not admitted, and then they come back 2 weeks after that, and they end up getting admitted, that counts as -2 plus -4, or is that just the -4 count?
They both count. It's a double day.
They both count. So there's some possible range of scores is from +1 to -6, right? You can't count twice.
Right.
+1 to -6. Okay.
So you get negative points for negative activities, but you don't get positive points for more than one E&M.
Well, each type of event is counted either 0 or 1. It's either didn't happen or it did happen. I mean, there could be multiple E&M visits, but there's only credit for one. There actually could be multiple readmissions, but it's only dinged once. And the same with the ED visits. You could have multiple ED visits, but it only counts
as one event. One negative.
Okay.
Once they come the first time, keep them there.
Okay. So testing and analysis 2I. quite understood these numbering, but they are. A component item measure analysis to justify inclusion in the composite. I think that that has been adequately explained, but I gave it an M because I still think that the testing remains to be done. Contribution to variability and composite score has been a hypothesis, and its validity or its meaning needs to be provided to us over the next period of time of observation. So I gave that an M. Analysis to support differential weighting of composite scores. I wasn't quite sure about, since it's arbitrary, whether that is adequate, but I gave it an M because I see the rationale of the weighting. I guess I wouldn't give it an H because it hasn't been validated. Analysis of missing component scores, since that's dependent on administrative data, it doesn't seem to have a problem, and it's been adequately described in terms of how to deal with missing scores. So reliability testing of composite scores, I guess that has the most difficult assessment. I gave it an M simply because it hasn't been tested. Dr. Rich, do you have comments on that?
I'm sorry, are you looking at the overall or just...
No, the reliability testing of the composite score, 2B.
2B?
Yes. That was after 5 hours of trying to understand.
I'm sorry, you say testing was not provided. Did you, what kind of testing we are talking about here? I'm sorry. You say we...
Reliability.
Yeah. What is...
The individual components are provided, and there are correlations drawn between each of the components.
Oh.
But the overall composite score hasn't been tested prospectively.
So it's a reliability is in terms of correlation among the individual measures in the composite.
Right.
Well, that we did provide, I thought, didn't we?
Is that what you're looking for?
We did
for reliability.
Can I just have a comment? I think, did someone say that the heart failure, the document that I'm looking at, unless I tabled it together wrong, says they use the AMI data to calculate this measure? It's really the heart failure one. It was in the heart failure previous measure that we talked about. We looked under the data set. I think there's some typographical errors in the document that I'm looking at. Just
okay.
Not the AMI discharge, right. Just the heart failure admission.
I think the reliability validity is very fuzzy here,
right.
In terms of these type of the measure, claim-based measure.
Well, yes, and I guess maybe if you could describe why you chose to do this course. So it's more of an internal consistency reliability that you were getting at by looking at the correlation of the individual components. So so from that standpoint, they have provided, and can you just provide the actual correlations, but what's your conclusion based on the correlation? The internal consistency correlations that you did.
Isn't it more validity thing? We are measuring the same thing consistently. Is that a more validity thing about the consisting of the measures and measuring the same construct?
Well, the internal consistency is a reliability that's often used with composite domain scores, those kinds of things. The validity testing, again, what our preference is, and again, validity testing usually is the most resource intensive, and a lot of measures ultimately fall back on face validity. But really, the question with the validity is, if you get these scores, can you make some conclusions about quality? Can you, if you have scores for a variety of hospitals, can you say, based on those scores, that, this hospital has better quality than another hospital? And is there any way, through formal testing, that you could test that theory? So if you had more direct measures of care coordination that you could, you know, test this against in a small sample, that would be one way. As I said, most of the measures that are submitted tend to rely on face validity simply because of the resources involved in doing formal validity testing.
So will you say that we have conducted a reliability test here?
Reliability testing.
So what
we just say that we conduct internal consistency testing.
Yeah.
We did the
internal consistency.
Okay.
So I believe we have provided the internal consistency testing information in the supplementary documentation that we submitted on the composite measures.
And you said that you rated it an M because of lack of
testing.
Fill in the blank.
For which reliability testing are we talking about?
Yeah, we're talking about two things, the reliability testing.
They provided data on that, and there are significant correlations reflecting reliability, but the kappa values were quite low, and I think the statistical significance derived largely from the fact of the enormous sample size, relatively low kappa.
What was the kappa?
What was the score?
I gave that an M.
For the same reason, the reliability was drawn on two of the three being convincingly reliable, and the ED one being much reliable. That's why I gave it an M. I didn't give it any lower. I don't think that's a deal breaker. I just picked it with the highest score. The validity testing, I think, is a different story. Whether it translates to an action plan for quality improvement, and I think it can if we have a clear idea about how to use the data. And in other words, I think that the data presentation and the way it's presented by CMS will have a crucial effect on how it is used. So I gave that an M rather than an H because I'm not certain about how that will be presented. Meaningful differences in performance. I think that likewise deserves attention, and I think that differences in performance based on using the components are likely to show something that's meaningful. So I gave that an M because I think it's going to depend on proving its utility. But that likewise isn't a deal breaker. It received the highest score. Disparities in care, I think that hasn't been approached. It can be evaluated post hoc, but that's an NA, not applicable.
So to what extent was the criterion scientific acceptability of measure properties met?
I think it's met if we accept that each of the three components have face validity and they appear to have some interrelatedness as far as quality of care is concerned. I think, again, that the major drawback is how the score is translated to the users, and I think that the developers would do well to describe in a little bit more detail how each of the components would play out with realistic goals for an intervention in each of the components. In other words, a reasonable reduction of readmission, a reasonable reduction in ED visits, and a reasonable optimal increase in E&M visits. I think its usability can then be translated, but I think a little bit more work needs to be done on it.
Dr. Rich, please. A couple of additional comments. On the disparities question, Why did you give it not applicable again? I give it an L. I think that it is important. No data available at this point. What's the rationale for giving it an NA?
Because the measure wasn't stratified.
I think it should be.
Should it be?
Very important issue.
I gave that one an L, and then on the overall, I also gave it an L, pretty much for the reasons that you've already articulated. I guess I'm a little bit more negative on it, particularly with respect to the lack of evidence that the score will provide a meaningful incremental value over the individual components or some other combination of component measures. I think that, again, conceptually I agree with the idea of a composite measure, but we need more data, and this one needs more work.
Okay. Before we go on to usability, Frieza, could you scroll back to reliability testing, because I want to clarify something. I had just started to read this and was looking at the correlation, but you did not do internal consistency reliability here, so I'm going to just ask you to describe. You did a correlation of looking at scores over time. So your rationale for that was to say that these scores are repeatable. Is that the reason
right.
for doing that correlation? Okay. And then you also did the looking at the Kappa statistic for the quintiles and calculating the weighted Kappa. So what was that to demonstrate? When you looked at the average scores and the five quintiles and
questioning.
Grant, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I don't really have the document in front of me anymore, though. I thought we did both, though. The correlations that we spoke of earlier between E&M, ED, and readmissions was sort of an internal consistency, and then we've done consistency over time, and both of those are sort of reliability-based.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure where there's a letdown on reliability.
No, I just wanted to clarify what was in your section on reliability. So I just wanted to make sure I hadn't misled the app here.
No, you haven't, and I think it's partially my continued need to refine the difference between reliability and validity, and I can see that deserves a higher score, so I'd give it a B. Can we come back to the other issue of disparities in care? I think that again, that it can be confusing in reading because it's listed as a not applicable and under consideration. If that's the case, then it does deserve a score, but if we don't have any data, then it can't be scored very high.
Right. The criterion states, if they have, you're right, and we probably need to look at this, but it says if disparities in care have been identified, measure specifications, scoring and analysis allow for identification of disparities, or rationale or data justifies why stratification is not necessary or not feasible. So if no data were presented of disparities, but this TAP is aware of the fact that disparities do exist, then there's still information that there are disparities. So that's what we're, I guess, asking you as more experts in the field, even though the measure submitter may not have submitted disparity information, is this an issue for this measure?
Well, and it's just been articulated in several other discussions. There is a disparity of care with socioeconomic status and perhaps gender and perhaps other areas, so I guess that needs to be addressed, and I expect that it will be addressed, but I guess it needs to be scored, and I agree with Dr. Rich that I'd give it an L.
Okay.
Okay. Usability, meaningful, understandable, and useful information. I think that I gave that an M because I still think that there are difficulties in its interpretation, and that I have some confidence that with looking at data in a more direct way that it will become more understandable. I don't think it should be cast out of hand, but I think that it needs more work. Harmonization. It seems to be harmonized with other measures, so I gave that an H. Distinctive or additive value, I gave that an M simply because I don't know whether that's going to add to the readmission rate, as Dr. Rich has said, but I'm curious to know the results. I think that this is worth pursuing, but I don't know that it's going to be incrementally better than the readmission rate.
Just on that point, I mean, there are two ways to look at that. Early in the day, it was described as, are we identifying the same hospitals that are low performers versus the same hospitals that are high performers? That's one way to cut it.
Mm-hmm.
Are we saying that let's say it identifies the same, just setting that one aside, are we saying that ED visits post-discharge are trivial, not worth measuring?
No, and in fact, I would say that I want the ED visits to be in there because I want to understand how they factor into shortfalls in care after a heart failure discharge. No, I'm not saying it's a trivial. I'm just saying that as a standalone issue, they're difficult to understand.
Sure.
That's all.
And I think you can sense that these items were developed as building blocks.
Yes.
Yes.
No, I strongly support the idea of a composite measure. I just want to understand how it can be used. And I want to understand how it can be used nationally as well as in my own institution. And then how it translates is really depends on how the information is presented.
So is the two measures scoring hospitals consistently, there's a high correlation that then you would say there's no added value of the ED?
That was my question. I don't understand that.
Because what you were saying that added value we interpret as that we will provide additional information in terms of hospital performance based on the scores, right? If we find...
The composite score.
Huh?
The composite score?
Oh, I thought about the ED and readmission because the question is what's the added value of ED to the existing measure? So I'm trying to operationalize what you asked, what we could do to clarify this issue. So you're saying the added value is we can interpret as that if the ED score hospital's performance or assess hospital performance consistently, then we don't need ED measure because readmission provides the picture of the hospital performance. So this is a question. Is that kind of analysis you're looking for?
I don't think that I said that.
I think she's framing a question similar to mine, which is that, you know, if it turns out that the hospitals, the top quintile hospitals are the top quintile on both, and the bottom are the bottom on both, and everywhere in between, if your performance on readmission is the same, let's say, relatively, as your performance on ED, is that enough to put to rest the ED visit? Because, I mean, I characterize it sort of stylistically as saying, does that mean that ED visits are trivial?
It doesn't mean the ED visit is trivial, but to me it means that it's not important to measure the ED visit as a performance measure, because we already have that information if we just look at
readmission.
The opposite is also true. But if we have all of the information in the ED visit, and the heart failure readmission at 30 days doesn't add anything, and we don't need that. The point is we don't need both if they give us exactly the same information as you articulated the question.
So you agree my suggestion here is there's a correlation, then you think one is enough. We don't need two of them.
I'm not sure, and I'll use an example at our institution because our patients, we have a specialty heart failure management service, as many people do, and you have direct admissions that you don't go to the emergency department. And it's like if you're an individual hospital and I don't, you know, those two things are completely different to me. How many people are using that? Those two services versus readmissions. If I only have readmission, it's not necessarily helping me to know how well my management service is doing because I'm missing my ED visit. So,
I think there are two different questions here. One is whether knowing ED admission rate is a valuable quality measure for management of heart failure, and that's likely to be the case. The other is how you use the knowledge of your ED admission rate in relation to others to decide whether there's a deficiency there. So if I'm in an urban hospital and I'm comparing my ED visit rate to a remote hospital, you'd expect there'd be differences, and that would probably come out in some kind of risk adjustment. But if you're comparing two urban hospitals together and there's a significant difference, that probably has something to do with as a valid quality measure. So I think that ED will tell me something, but it doesn't tell me anything alone apart from looking at other quality measures. So it really depends on whether it's a scorecard that you want to develop or is it a quality measure you want to act upon.
My interpretation, what you want is to see both, and because a hospital can look at both and see what is going on here. Is that what you're thinking? You sort of agree to have both measures because you want to know how what hospital can do or to interpret those?
Correct, but I want both.
Yeah.
But the question that you seem to be asking was I saying that the ED visit data is not worth measuring? And that's not what I was saying.
I just trying to understand, if we're going to provide you analysis on issue, I need to understand that issue. If the issue is added value, apparently you already confirmed there is added value to it, right?
Yes.
So they conceptualize there is an added value to it. So what kind of analysis will help you to clarify more of that?
I don't
think we necessarily have a complete alignment of opinions. I don't think Dr.
Okay.
Rich and Dr. Gibbons feel exactly the same way. Dr. Rich feels there's a little less, you know, additional value, and that's what he'd like to know. Is it worth doing another measure? What's the information to be gained? Dr. Gibbons is a little less concerned about that. So I think what you're seeing is two somewhat coming from two different. That's what I'm hearing anyway.
I'm interested in the context in which the ED utilization is reported. And going back to maybe an hour ago, when we were talking about what percentage of ED visits after index heart failure admission are related to heart failure. That's the type of information that would help me in a quality assurance improvement, or at least an action plan to see what percentage of my patients are being seen in the emergency room before they have a chance to be seen for an EM visit for heart failure, because then we're focusing on a disease-specific intervention.
Well, that information hospital can dig into, they can find out. And also, I think if you want it, I mean, we can provide this information, but if I understand correctly, it's not going to relate to your decision on whether ED is a good measure. Right?
The one comment I'd make, Glenn, is that is I think that the reason for coming to ED seems to be a recurring topic among us. So not only the folks here, but we'll take this steering committee, it'll go for public comment, get out, it'll go through the whole thing. So I'm just wondering if this information might help all of those potential audiences just understand it in terms of helping us in the underlying case validity.
Okay.
Of it.
Yeah. So the information what we'll be providing is to find out all these causes of the ED visit that will shed light on that.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to say that I'm not trying to be difficult. I'll try to understand what we are going to provide you, because we have contractor. We need to provide that.
Well, you know, it's more than just the issue of readmissions. I think it's important for us to know why heart failure patients need to interact with the healthcare system. For instance, just 2 months ago, the Mayo Clinic reported on their experience of how heart patients with an index diagnosis of heart failure at any point, whether hospital admission or clinic visit, what is their lifetime usage of hospitalization? It was very interesting because it's only about 30% of the patients who were diagnosed with heart failure as an outpatient were ever hospitalized. So there's clearly something about the patients who need hospitalization or emergency room visits that characterizes the high utilization of healthcare money. So it would be nice for us to know more information about how that interaction takes place.
Okay.
Because it's not just the hospitalized patient, it's when they eventually need hospitalization that characterizes.
I agree with what you're saying. It would be nice to have more information about the sort of things, but I would raise the question of whether implementing performance measures is really the appropriate strategy for gaining that type of information, as opposed to other types of surveys and so forth. And my feeling is that since these performance measures require a national, they require significant time commitment to collect the data. They require significant commitment on your end to analyze and report the data. That I don't think that just adding measures because it's something that we can measure is necessarily what we want to endorse. I think that we'd like to have, again, a parsimonious group of measures that captures as much of the information as possible at the lowest upfront cost for doing that. And so we have two measures that may give us more or less equivalent information. I think it's not a good approach to take for this. And you know, again, if we saw that the ED measure provided some incremental value, then yeah. But if not, and this is where you know both sides speculating, we don't know, we don't have the data. That I think that the next step, from my view, is to get more data and see if this provides useful information. If it does, great, then we can move forward.
Oh, we have no problem to get more information. I think the Viva is getting very anxious, want to move this thing forward. So we just wait until the summary of the conclusion, exactly what we are asked to do.
Right, and
we're
more
than happy to do that.
I don't want to give the impression that we've thrown it out of hand. It's a matter of asking questions, trying to understand the process, and trying to support your work, because you've obviously spent a significant amount of time of very intense thinking on this, and I want to thank you for that, because what you're doing has certainly added to our understanding of the types of issues that we need to look at. So this is a process that goes on until the steering committee in April and beyond, when we're trying to understand how to make decisions about this.
And we want to get good measures out of this process too.
I'm reminded that we have 11 minutes to be out of this room. So if we can continue with the measures, web criteria, usability, again, interpretability, we already said that was an M. Harmonization, it appears to be harmonized. I don't see a problem with that. Distinctive or additive value, we gave an M because we have individual questions, but certainly supported as standing. Decomposition of the composite, we gave an H. Achieved the stated purpose, I gave an M because I think that remains to be seen with supplemental data and analysis as time goes on. And so to what extent was the criteria and usability met? I gave an M. We weight other information, how this meshes with subsequent data and of usability. Feasibility is easier to answer because I think since the data have been well described, their acquisition is well described, I gave that
H's for 4A, 4B, 4D, 4E, and I guess that's it. Overall, to what extent was feasibility met? It's inherently met because all the components seem to be met. So usability is the most troublesome of the criteria to accept, and I think we want to work with the developers to make sure that we can give an informed and adequate score so that we can support the measure, because obviously it has important implications for the amount of work that's done and also the impact on providing better heart failure care. So I would want to support the work and look forward to hearing from you about the types of data that you're able to get.
Dr. Rich? I basically agree. I gave the overall score an L and 7M for all of the same reasons we already discussed. And just, I think we need more more data and concept of this composite measure. I completely support. It's a good idea. Plus the fact that in the broader context, I think that seeing that from the measure we've looked at today for MI and for heart failure, and it sounds like some comments that have been made that the overall concept of developers is that we'll have a composite measure to look at transitions in care, coordination of care across a broad range of diagnoses, not just heart failure, not just MI. I think that would be a tremendous advance and very valuable. Encouraging of that, those continued efforts.
Want to make some
closing remarks?
Closing remarks,
sure. Long day. Thank you very, very much to everyone. This group still has several measures to evaluate. We have a series of conference calls scheduled. In terms of the follow-up for this day's work, what we'll be doing is writing up the comments and your evaluation of the criteria into two forms. We're going to, the long form will be, we'll put all of your thing into one of the evaluation forms. That will ultimately go to the steering committee. But we'll also do a summary in a table form where we'll tabulate the scores on the subcomponents and capture your summary. Those will go out to the members of the committee for you to, you know, review, be sure we got it right, and before it's forwarded on. So hopefully we'll have that done in about 10 days, and you'll be here, you know, receiving that, and we really appreciate your review of the information for accuracy and completeness in terms of representing the discussion. Also, just for your own reference, as soon as we have them, both the recording and the transcript will be posted to NQF's website on the project webpage for this project. So you'll be able to go back and revisit it anytime you want. So we also have the resources to go back and listen to some of the conversation, both written form and verbally as well. So with that, if any other comments?
I want to thank the panel, because I think every time we come here, we learn a lot. It's very good for us because, you know, if we are going to implement it, we need to know all the issues that ever could be raised, and these are very good issues that be raised.
Thanks.
Thank you, everyone. Travel safely.
There was one question.
Anybody on the phone? No.
One thing came up. Several TAP members mentioned that they wanted reiteration of the actual dates and times and topics for the conference call.
Okay.
I'll resend it out. I sent it out. I can't remember when I put that, but the next one is February 5th from 12 to 2, and it's measures 12 and 13. But I'll forward it again.